welcome to So French, the show about the twists and turns, intrigues and insights to all things French.
Every 2 weeks, we select the best, most interesting and fascinating of French news stories, all brought to you from a studio in the heart of Paris. My name is Stéphane Vries.
And my name is Sarah Bertelson.
And this week, the French president was under fire once again for his contempt towards the working class and the unemployed. But it's just straight talk, say his defenders.
And the thriller-like case of the killing of one of France's richest women came up in court this week.
And we're having a glass of champagne. Or two.
But first, French President Emmanuel Macron's closest security officer, he's even been called Macron's bodyguard. He has been defending himself before the a Senate inquiry this week, saying he was neither a police officer nor a real bodyguard. What's this all about, Stefan?
Yeah, well, this is the scandal that broke this summer, actually, revelations by the newspaper Le Monde in July.
It became just before the summer break.
Yeah, just before the summer break. And just a couple of days after France became the world champion of football. We've already forgotten that, but
the celebrations didn't last very long.
No, indeed. They were disturbed by Alexandre Benalla, and the case is now called the Benalla case. Alexandre Benalla was in charge of the president's security. Yeah, it all started when the French media published a video seeing Benalla manhandling protesters during a police-led crowd control operation in May last year. And the thing is that he is not a police officer, so he was not allowed to interfere.
But especially he was wearing some kind of riot gear equipment
he looked like a police officer.
Yes, and very much so. And acting like a police officer, yeah. Or I don't know, someone in the security.
And that's a criminal offense in France if you pretend being a police officer. But he was also the closest aide of Emmanuel Macron. Of course, a lot of people were upset that a close aide of Macron was beating up people in the streets of Paris. Macron in the beginning said it was just a storm in a teacup, but actually became quite serious. There was a parliamentary inquiry and
it got worse also because of the fact that, you know, this video, apparently this whole incident was known to the Élysée. But the only punishment that was given to Benalla was a couple of weeks of suspension. And he wasn't fired until after this whole scandal broke and after media started talking about it. So that also created this idea that maybe not only Benalla was protecting Macron, but also that Macron and the Élysée was trying to protect Benalla.
Exactly. And now the Senate was organizing a hearing. And first, Benalla didn't want to come last week. He said, the Senate, they're just a bunch of clowns, or
something
the president
like it.
is a marquis or something like that.
Petit marquis.
A petit marquis. But then finally the Senate said, well, if you are summoned to come at this hearing, we can send the police and bring you in.
So he went.
He went, indeed, this week. Very early in the
morning. It was an interesting hearing, I mean, I must say, because, you know, we have heard over the last couple of months this talk about Alexandre Benalla being some kind of rough guy. And we also, everybody's seen these images of him, you know, punching protesters. And there he was this week in a suit and a tie, looking very tidy, speaking very clearly and, articulately about and answering all the questions, and even starting by actually apologizing to the head of this inquiry.
Yeah, saying, absolutely.
I shouldn't have called you a petit marquis. He wasn't nice.
He looked and spoke like an ideal son-in-law. He's only 27 years old, should be said as well. And the most interesting thing is that he said that he wasn't the bodyguard, because over the past 2 months, all the media and also politicians have been calling him Macron's bodyguard, but actually he wasn't, well, according to his own declarations. But he's, of course, in a very difficult position because he needs to, he broke the law, that's for sure. He needs to protect the president, so he cannot really say anything that will incriminate the president. But he also needs to defend himself. So he's in a very difficult position.
And he had some good media training, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Before because today, he was very arrogant week last too. Week. And now suddenly, all of a sudden, he was very polite and you know, reflective. So absolutely, he's had some media training that shows. So the legal investigation is still going on into what he did exactly and what was his role in the Élysée, because it's still not known what was his job. He said this week he was not a bodyguard, but he didn't say what he was. Well, he said, I was in charge of coordinating the security at the Élysée Palace. But he was also, and it's really strange, he was in the bus with the French national team when they were parading on the Champs-Élysées. He was in front of the bus. So what was he doing with the national football team when he was already supposed to be suspended? So it's very strange. A lot of questions asked.
And I mean, some of the police, there is a very strict protocol for the protection of the president of France, of course. And the unions for the police and the gendarmes who are in charge of this, they are very suspicious as well regarding Benalla's position and job, because they say that, you know, we knew nothing about, I mean, he wasn't part of our organization.
No, he's a civilian.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But still, he came in on certain missions and acted on behalf of the Élysée. And this, of course, became a very complicated situation for those who are actually in charge of the president's security. So there are a lot of questions. One of the main issues during this Senate inquiry was, of course, the question of him wearing a gun.
Yeah.
Because he had asked for the permission and gotten a permission authorization to wear a gun. And that's also where the story is actually diverse, because you have Benalla now saying that he was wearing this gun for his own protection. It's because he was under threat. We're not quite sure from whom. Why?
So there was the Benalla case this summer, and then a couple of weeks ago, the resignation of Nicolas Hulot, the very popular environment minister. We talked about him in our last episode. And then this week, another minister said he was going to leave, Gérard Collomb, the home minister. He said that he wants to be the mayor of Lyon again. He's already 71 years old.
I don't know how much that is bad news for Emmanuel Macron, though, because I'm not sure that Collomb is one of the government's most popular
True, but Collomb is, of course, is one of the most loyal allies of Macron. He was one of the first to campaign for Macron. So if he's leaving and there's this Benalla case and Nicolas Hulot, it shows that there's really something going on at the Élysée Palace. So all these incidents are really affecting Emmanuel Macron's position. But the president himself is not helping himself either, because he cannot shut his mouth.
Now, Stefan, I don't know, what would you do if you were looking for a job?
Well, I've learned this week that it's very easy to find a job in France, where only 3 million people are looking for jobs, but apparently you just have to cross the street.
Yes. This according to the French president himself, Emmanuel Macron. So this was a conversation, I don't know,
an exchange.
Yeah. Emmanuel Macron had with a young man, trained as a gardener, must say, who approached Emmanuel Macron and said, you know, listen, I'm a trained gardener. I'm looking for a job, but I can't find one. What do you do to help someone like me? And this is what Emmanuel Macron had to say.
Dans l'hôtellerie, le café, la restauration, dans le bâtiment, il n'y a pas un endroit où je vais où ils me disent pas qu'ils cherchent des gens. Hôtel, café, restaurant, je traverse la rue, je vous en trouve. Il veut simplement des gens qui sont prêts à travailler, avec les contraintes du métier.
Yeah, so this was Macron saying, if you're motivated in hotels, cafes, restaurants and construction, everywhere I go, people tell me that they're looking to hire. If I cross the street, I'll find you work. So that's easy.
And
right?
that went down well with the French public, didn't it?
No, not at all. No, people found this really an illustration of his arrogance and the fact that he's disconnected to society. But actually, it also led to a lot of very funny things online, of course.
Absolutely. It's been really the laugh of the week, I must say, because the people got very, very creative.
Very, yeah, yeah, yeah. One of the most posted images was the famous cover of the album of the Beatles on Abbey Road.
Yeah.
With the, just the subtitle of four people.
Four young men.
Four young men looking for a job, of course, crossing the road. Yeah, it was really funny. The road sign for a pedestrian crossing was transformed into the new logo of the unemployment office. People got really creative.
Yeah, but of course, people got very, very upset as well about this because, you know, this goes, it wasn't the first time that Emmanuel Macron has been talking quite strongly, using quite strong and, you know, direct speech to people that he crosses in the street or, you know, that tries to approach him. We all remember Don't Call Me Manu.
Yeah.
For example, about the young student who said, hey, you know, the short for Emmanuel, and he was immediately corrected.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, young man, call me Emmanuel Macron, Monsieur President, maybe he said.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Earlier this summer, we also had Emmanuel Macron saying that France is, you know, throwing crazy amounts of cash into the social security system, but it still doesn't help people. So, you know, it's what do we say? It's been a couple of these incidents, what to say, and, you know, people are a bit divided over how to react to it. Some are saying that this is just the supporters, of course, are saying that this is just straight talk and, you know, this is
the
how
truth.
People, it's the truth. And, you know, he knows what he's talking about and people wants to hear this kind of talk from the president. He's not just a beau parleur, as you would say in French, you know, nice, a smooth talker.
Yeah, absolutely. It shows he may have a point about the jobs in the restoration because a lot of hotels and restaurants are looking for people, but the wages are very bad. The hours are very long or irregular. So it's a tough job. So not a lot of people.
And I also heard someone saying, you know, that someone who's trained as a gardener to go work as a waiter in a restaurant, that's a no-win situation. It's a lose-lose situation for everyone because people should not be in positions where that they're neither trained for or they don't want to be there either. So, I mean, the ideal thing would be to try to change the country so that they actually train people for the jobs that are available. But that's a structural issue and not an individual question.
So this new language incident added to the image of a very arrogant president, and it's not doing him any good in the ratings. The funniest joke actually was also made this week because Alexandre Benalla, here he is again, he declared in the Senate hearing that he was now unemployed.
Yes.
So a lot of people tweeted, just cross the street.
Vous écoutez So French.
You are listening to So French.
Now, if you like shopping and you like Emmanuel Macron, there's a good way to join these two interests in one, right, Stefan?
Absolutely, because the Élysée, the presidential palace, opened a Macron fan store this week online. That's not the official name, but let's call it this way, because they sell all kinds of goodies, ranging from mugs with a photo of the French president to t-shirts with slogans of Macron and even collar plates with Brigitte Macron on
it. Do they have the Don't Call Me Manu?
No, but you can order them probably now on other websites because there are already a lot of websites making fun of
the
store.
And they don't have the only just cross the street either, I assume.
Yeah, I think you can order it now. Yeah. And of course, all these products are made in France, bien sûr. And it is inspired by the official White House gift shop that opened already in 1946 in Washington. But actually, the French store that opened this week is it's more a personal cult shop of Emmanuel Macron. Have you been on the site?
I saw
there's a t-shirt with Première Dame or First Lady, and that will set you back 55 euros.
Cheap to become the First Lady, though.
Yeah, absolutely, for 55 euros, but it's expensive for just a t-shirt. But it was actually a success. In the first 3 days the store opened, they already sold for over 350,000 euros of stuff. So that's a hit.
And we must say why they're selling, and you know, to what profit this money goes.
Yeah, well, they say that the profits will be used for the restoration of the 300-year-old presidential palace. But it's also a way of promoting young French creators, hip brands that are only made in France and that are now going abroad. So,
have you bought something, Stefan?
No, not yet. But I did like the T-shirt with Poudre de Pimperlimpin. That's something Emmanuel Macron said during the debate last year with Marine Le Pen. So that's on it. But it's pretty expensive, about 50 euros for a T-shirt. I'm not sure if I shop there, but it's so this is the story of the new store of the Élysée Palace. You can see all the stuff they sell on boutique.elysee.fr. And now it's time for crime. We talk about a court case that's got all the ingredients of a blockbuster. Monaco, money, and murder. And this is all about the four-year-old murder case of Monaco Harris, Hélène Pastor. She was killed by a gun wound outside a hospital in Nice in 2014. And the court case started this week. Sarah, you know all about this, right?
I couldn't stop reading about this case. I found it extremely fascinating. To start with, I mean, very few people actually knew about Hélène Pastor when she was, well, she wasn't, you know, she was maybe known in Monaco, but she was no household name because she was a very discreet billionaire to begin with. But she was one of France's richest women because she actually inherited a massive, massive property empire in Monaco. It was all created by her grandfather, an Italian immigrant, who started building way before the Monaco became that luxurious city that it is today. So the Pastor family actually owns 4,000 apartments in the world's most expensive city. So Hélène Pastor, she had inherited then 90,000 square meters of offices, and this was estimated to around 12 billion euros. And only the rents from these houses, from these apartments, generated about 22 million euros in every year. So these are enormous amounts of money we're talking about here. And she was a very generous person. She had two children, one daughter and one son, Gildo. And she gave her son and daughter as pocket money, about 500,000 euros every month.
Well, that doesn't get you very far in Monaco, but it's still a nice sum. So what happened to Hélène Pastor?
Well, according to the prosecutor, Hélène Pastor was actually visiting her sick son, who was then hospitalized in Nice. And when she came out from the hospital, she and her private chauffeur were killed by a sawn-off shotgun. This was in May 2014. She was hospitalized and later died in hospital. But what happened then was quite quickly, police investigation actually found the two men who they thought were the behind this killing. And what is quite interesting is that even the police is saying that, you know, these two men, they were particularly bad killers because they left prints everywhere, DNA. They were filmed while, you know, they were entering a hotel, and they took a taxi to the murder, to the place where they actually committed the murder. So it wasn't very difficult to find the people who pulled the trigger. But then things got even a little bit more interesting, because about a month after this murder, a personal trainer in Monaco, who was even the personal trainer of Hélène Pastor's own daughter, admitted that he had been the one who had set up this killing. But on behalf of whom?
Yeah, that's a good question. On behalf of whom?
On behalf of Hélène Pastor's own son-in-law, who was then the partner of Hélène Pastor's daughter, Sylvia. So this is when the story is getting really, really interesting.
Yeah, who's his son-in-law?
Well, his name is Wojciech Janowski, 69 years old, Polish, of Polish descent. Well, he was actually born and raised in Poland. He later moved to Monaco with one of his first wives. He was in a couple with the pastor's daughter Sylvia for 28 years.
Wow.
He had a couple of businesses that were not very successful. He tried to act like these businesses were actually functioning, but apparently they didn't do that well. He also had a charity, and he was a quite respected man in Monaco.
But he was not very happy about his mother-in-law.
He wasn't happy about his mother-in-law, and especially he was not happy. I mean, he had huge debts that he had through his, you know, failings in the business, in different businesses. Throughout his life, throughout the years, actually took money through his daughter and put them on his own accounts and, you know, bought things that he bought for the family. But at the end of the day, they realized that he actually had bought it all for himself.
that's a great story. I wonder how the Christmas dinners went there with Mr. Janowski and his mother-in-law the year before she was killed.
Well, apparently, yeah, they didn't get along very well. And Hélène Pastor was actually very, very suspicious of Wojciech Janowski even before the killing. And she had hired a private detective that she had to investigate and try to figure out who this Janowski actually was. So she was very suspicious even from the beginning. Well, so when investigators later sort of realized that it was Janowski who had ordered the killing, Janowski was taken into custody, as was his partner Sylvia, then the daughter of Hélène Pastor. During this custody, he admitted, finally, that he was the one behind all of this. But now, once this case has finally become a real court case, he actually withdrew his
statement.
Yes, he withdrew it, and so now he's saying it's all just a setup, and you know, we will see. It's going to continue for quite some time. This a couple of weeks more. This court case. So yes, we will see what's going to happen next. But it's really fascinating, and you know, when you see all the money that's involved in this case, he you know, without the knowledge of his partner, he managed to just over like a year and a half embezzle 7.5 million euros.
And she didn't even notice. No. I usually notice it directly when somebody takes 7.5 million out of my account.
Yeah, it's really, really sad.
Yeah,
story.
Monaco is really a different planet. Eh? It's incredible. So the trial is expected to last 5 weeks. So that means that around November, we will have the verdict, and we'll talk about it again here on So French.
Now, this is the last week of harvest at the Champagne region, 3 to 4 weeks earlier than usual. Stefan, you went there this week.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite amazing. Usually, Champagne, it's one of the most northern regions of wine in the world. Of course, world famous. And usually they harvest at the end of September to the beginning of October. But now they already started at the end of August. Of course, because we had an exceptional summer, very warm, very dry, ideal circumstances for the Champagne region, but also a sign of climate change. And I spoke to a winemaker, Jérôme Dehour, of Dehour et Fils, and also to somebody from the trade union of the Champagne makers. Let's have a listen.
This is only the fifth time that August harvest is happening in Champagne. Over history, we have seen that once in the early 19th century, and then five times over the last 15 years. Of course, we are worried first for the ability of our children to produce champagne if the weather is really hotter and drier. And then you have the classic risks linked to hot weathers, such as dehydration of the vines, and then the grapes are smaller or they are mature slowly. There's a conscience that we need to be more reactive and more cautious.
Jérôme Dehour is the owner of the wine house his grandfather started last century. He already changed his production methods.
It's a big evolution. I was born in October 66. During my 10 first years, it was always harvest when it was my birthday.
And that's no longer the case?
No. I think we have to adapt,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
So more and more we have to harvest earlier, and we have to adapt to press the grapes quickly just after the picking. I think it's not negative, and I think I'm making best wine now than I made maybe 20 years ago.
Now, so this year will be exceptional, but what about, I mean, on long term? What
does it look like? It's a paradox because this year was great. The conditions were perfect for champagne. A dry spring, lots of water in the winter, a very dry summer. So the grapes are perfect. There was a huge quantity of grapes, so it means they can make a lot of bottles, but also very high quality. So you would say climate change is perfect for champagne. And in a way it is, because it's so high up north, they really benefit from global warming. But they also have to change, because they have to change the grape varieties, so they're researching a lot. They have to change the way that they're picking grapes. The champagne will become stronger, so there's more alcohol in it, because the grapes, when they have a lot of sun, they contain more sugar, so that transforms into alcohol. And the other advantage is that they will need less additives. So because the quality is so good, they need less herbicides, pesticides, etc., less sugar in the champagne as well. But the other regions in Europe are really suffering from climate change. For instance, in the Alsace, in the east of France, but also in Germany, wine growers lost about 20 to 30% of their grapes because they simply, well, more or less burned in the sun. They're not used to those.
And there were these massive storms as well. Thunderstorms that really destroyed a big parts of the wines.
Yeah, that's apart from global warming, that's even a bigger factor, because the weather becomes so unpredictable. It can be a very beautiful spring, and then suddenly in the summer there are grills and thunderstorms, and it can basically destroy all your grapes. So the uncertainty is a big risk. And even though they are very happy with the harvest now, and they will be probably happy with the next 10 years, they really will have to change. And it's just a sign of the fact that climate change is real, and especially after this crazy summer, not only in France, but in the rest of Europe as well. I think, well, hopefully we realize that it's now, you know, we have to start, we have to do something.
To protect the champagne.
Absolutely. That could be, that's a good argument, right?
It's the best argument ever.
Save the planet, drink more champagne.
Well, now with that, we wrap up this edition of So French. We hope you have enjoyed it.
Please follow us on Twitter at So French News. You can listen to us on most of the well-known podcast platforms. And don't forget to rate us in iTunes. And please leave a comment.
And if you like French music, check out our free playlist on Spotify, which we update regularly. Just search for So French Podcast or click the link on our website.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of So French.
We hope you will join us then. Thank you for listening.
Au revoir.